Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Warning, we are talking politics and we're not Trumpeters. How will Arnold do hosting Celebrity Apprentice? Lindsay has a new man and there are too many award shows. That and an inside look at composing in film and television with Alexander Artson now. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting across from film composer Alexander Artson. Hello.
Hello.
I am glad to have you on. I feel like we've known each other for a while.
A very long time.
But yeah, I think we only really met once.
Yeah, it's true. We went to a cheesecake, actually, I think.
Yeah, we did. Now, Alexander and I know each other through a project at Chapman University where I went to school, and I believe you were just starting school at that point.
Yeah, I actually was just working on projects there because I went to Berkeley, but I was just contacting various filmmaking schools around the country. Chapman was one of the best ones, so it was like a no-brainer to contact people there.
Yeah.
I think I worked on a pilot with Ali DeFranco.
Yes.
And that's, I think, how we then got to know each other.
Yes, Rising Above. Ali and I, she was in from New York, and I actually just went to lunch with her yesterday. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's funny. Everything happening in the same weekend.
Exactly.
All related, of course. Your name is a familiar sound to our listeners because you are the composer of our theme song. And our jingle, however we refer to it.
Yeah, exactly.
Our jingle, lead-in.
Theme song.
Our lead-in,
so
yes.
So many different ways to say it.
So, yeah. So, you know, people might be saying, I know that name. And now you know why, because he has composed our show. And also, I mean, Alexander, I listen to your music at work sometimes, the SoundCloud. I'll put it on and just, you know, let it roll through. And I listen. So I love listening to that. I love a lot of the stuff that you've done. And it's just good listening for me. It's because it's quality work.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I like to do different genres of music, but I definitely always want to keep quality at the utmost, you know, all the time.
Absolutely. Well, we're broadcasting from Alexander's studio here, and we've got a good show for you, so let's go. How can we avoid, and I usually don't talk about politics on this show because, and the same way I don't talk about Kardashians, you can watch anything, you can just scroll through news feeds to see the news of the day. But how can we avoid the politic world right now?
It's everywhere.
I mean, I'm so tired of seeing Donald's face. I can't tell you. He's on everything.
No, it's funny. Because we'll talk about it later, but I scored a Harry Potter fan film, and for one moment in one day, like last week, it was on the Yahoo homepage. But it was a few articles down, but the article at the top was Donald Trump. But when I like posted it, I like blurred his face out. I just want to like show, hey, it's on Yahoo.
Right.
But
yeah.
He was unavoidable. Like, he's right there always, like constantly, like in everybody's mind.
Too much. I've been watching a lot of Rachel Maddow, and I think a lot of people should be watching Rachel because I think that she's, you know, of course people can say MSNBC, my God, they're so left. But to me, I think that they represent me, and I think that she was almost as like a college essay in her opening.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you know?
Regardless of your political leanings, I mean, you can't fault her facts and what she brings up. It's not like, you know, she doesn't, whether she has a bias, the facts she tells everybody are true. Really,
exactly.
No fault in
she's
the fact.
Showing footage that people indeed did
yeah.
say.
Roll and, the clip and then
yeah.
you don't have to say anything.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, she's just so smart the way she presents her information. And she did such a great piece about how Donald has really kind of enforced this violence
yeah.
and encouraged it. That's really like what I got out of it more than anything. The violence and all the people coming out to not support and to create a problem. Now he's threatening to send people over to Bernie's rallies. How is this helping? How is encouraging violence in a very difficult and political environment going to help really unite the country?
I don't know. It's so weird because, I mean, I used to watch The Apprentice, like, from the very beginning, the very first season. I love The Apprentice.
Love
this
it.
Is before he, yeah, it was fantastic. I watched, like, the first, like, 3, 4, 5 seasons. I loved it. Then I went to college, I think, and then it was, like, all Celebrity Apprentice, and I didn't care as much. But it's just crazy. I mean, you know, you never know what people are really thinking, and then they start talking, like, you know, about the politics of how they view things, and you're like, oh, no, what happened? You know, because I mean, he started with a bang to begin with, so it's not like he even started, like, quietly. He started with the whole Mexican thing, and it was like, it just went on from there. And now it's like, you're used to that level of rhetoric, but he's taken it to another notch. And
right.
So it's, I don't know if there's some strategy behind this for him, or if this is really just exactly how he feels, or if he's playing some game. I can't tell yet.
I've talked to a lot of people, and especially some folks back home that I would consider are quite conservative, and they don't like him as a person. And I'm like, okay, that's good. I'm glad that we can understand that. But everyone who defends him seems to be on this economic, you know, tide that he's been riding.
Yeah, that he'll be the greatest job president ever.
Exactly. But, I mean, that's only a facet of what it is to hold the highest office in the land.
Of course. It's not all, because they're saying, like, it's not all trade deals. Not everything the president do is trade deals. I mean, if the economy is doing well, and the economy is doing decently, I think. I don't think there's any argument that it's doing decently, you know, unless you're trying to force an issue with your voters to kind of tell them otherwise. Mm-hmm. A president really is more of an international force, and that's what scares me to some extent, is that just at any moment, you don't know where he's going to go. I mean, one day he goes this direction, the day he goes that direction. That's a little scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
For politics abroad, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, with him, it's just too much. But my real passion in all of this election is the fact that the House of Representatives and the Senate, that needs to be more stressed, that the people who are there that do not represent you or your viewpoints should not be there. And those are the people that have held this country hostage for 8 years. And I've said it before on this show, I find John Boehner to be completely un-American and what he did with holding people back and their passion to make Obama a one-term president and then punishing him for the next couple of years.
That was Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell is the one we're going to make him a one-term president. Mm-hmm. Didn't get that right. So now he's going to try to deny him a second justice nomination, which is the day Antonin Scalia died, whatever you think of him. Oh, but you're supposed to follow, you know, the protocol, and it's within the year, it's within more than enough time for president to suggest that he can at least nominate
definitely
somebody. Let alone them, they're going to say no probably no matter what. But
but
when you're doing that, when they even have rumors of like nominating a Republican to go onto it, and they're still saying no, it's like, so you're just doing it, why then?
Just
obstructionism.
Exactly.
No other reason.
Exactly. Well, that's been the theme. And that's why I'm saying I think it's so important that, you know, the people that don't represent your voice, do not vote for those people. Because they're not going to help anybody. Like, and I, you know, I think Bernie has a lot of good ideas, and I'm very progressive in my own way. However, if he can come up with as many ideas as he likes, but if the people don't want to pass that, and you've got log cabin Republicans and people that are just way too conservative to even consider supporting our president of the United States, whoever he or she may be, you know, then forget it. Then nothing, we're going to be right back locked up where we are. So it's like, to me, that's the most important thing. That's what I've been stressing in my own life.
No, yeah, I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think some of the people that might be more informed sometimes don't go out to vote. They're so disenchanted by the whole process, and that's exactly probably what those people that want to stay in power appreciate, because they're not going to then give them trouble in an election cycle.
Well, look, I mean, Trump has dedicated himself to appealing to the lowest common denominator.
Yeah, I love low-educated people. I mean, when you literally say that, I mean, being put on Front Street.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's easy to call people names, but it's not so easy to get people to understand what you're going to do as president. And he has yet to answer a question, in my opinion, as to what he will do with other policies besides building walls.
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, the problem is also then when the other candidates try to play his game, they lose. Like Marco Rubio, like, tries to then went down into the dirt and didn't quite make it out. We'll see on Tuesday.
Yeah,
but
exactly. But that, I mean, the overall thing that just fascinates me the most is nothing hurts Trump.
Teflon just
unbelievable. But even his numbers, his supporters, I mean, there was this big thing about, you know, with Chicago recently, where there was the rally and all of the people that were up in arms, and it did turn quite violent, and I think three people had to go to the intensive care unit. And, you know, there was a question, is this going to hurt Trump's numbers? And it should, but it definitely, in my opinion, will not. I don't see how it can at this point.
No, because, well, the people that already supported him are not going to stop supporting him. It's a matter of, is he going to start losing some of the new people that he needs to keep the momentum going into the rest of the states?
True.
That'd be the only thing. Because, I mean, if Rubio and Kasich can hold him off in their home states, then it goes to a contested election or a contested convention, and that would be so exciting. I don't know. Just be kind of like, because that'd be crazy. I mean, that hasn't happened since the 60s. I mean, literally the 60s. So that'd be really interesting to see how that would
get. Well, I would count on that, because I think it's only going to get more crazy from there, and I don't see the people still hanging in there leaving anytime soon.
No.
And, you know, you mentioned a combination of things, Celebrity Apprentice and John Kasich.
Exactly.
Well, they're related, actually. Somehow they are. Because Arnold Schwarzenegger, the new host of Celebrity Apprentice coming up, has endorsed John Kasich.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Did that just happen recently?
Yeah, I think earlier in the month. Yeah.
Okay.
So, interesting. I don't know if it's going to help John. I think John is, you know, I don't know what's going on with him, but he seems to be, if I were to go Republican, that would probably be the way I would go. I don't know.
Yeah, he just seems the, grown up of the bunch that's left.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of liked Chris Christie to a certain extent, but, you know, he would have been Trump if Trump wasn't in there. But since Trump was in there, he lost any possibility of having that edge.
Because
that's who he would have been. But Trump takes all the oxygen out of the room, especially from a person like Chris Christie.
Yeah,
right. I don't know if you saw those funny vines and stuff, like him behind Trump, like with like the dun, yeah, dun, yeah. Dun, like the, oh my god, it's so bad.
I mean, yeah, when Jimmy Fallon did this, he had the stand up of what's his face, Chris Christie behind him. That's all you needed. Like, you didn't need anyone to play Christie, because that's literally all he did for that whole speech.
Yeah.
So I hope that you can find the entertainment value in our discussion, because it's just such a circus, and I think it's an embarrassment for us in front of the whole world.
He's brought reality TV to politics. I mean, he became a reality TV star. He was already famous before he went on The Apprentice, but I mean, he obviously grew much more famous because of that. That's how I learned about Donald Trump, was The Apprentice.
Yep.
You know, and
same.
Then he just kept on parlaying that into bigger and bigger things. Obviously, it didn't go in 2012, but now he is becoming unstoppable to some extent.
And how the world must view us. I can only imagine at this point. They do not represent me, I will tell you that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's talk about way more important things as we look to the future. The Celebrity Apprentice. I know you wanted to discuss more about it.
Yeah, no.
I read some spoilers from the set. So, talk about big doings. I mean, you know, things to really look out for. It looks like Brooke Burke-Charvet is going to have a feud with Layla Ali.
Oh,
there
were
some heated photos. I'm already excited for that. And Carson Kressley was injured and walking around in a sling. So we'll have to see how that all unrolls when the Celebrity Apprentice returns.
Oh, man, yeah. Well, they'll definitely hype it up and do all the crazy. I'm curious how Arnold is going to be. Like, because he's the first person to not be Donald Trump doing this. So I'm really curious, like, how he's going to, his personality with everything.
Martha Stewart did take it over for one season.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I
don't remember a frame of that.
It's
like not even on my radar.
I think I was in college by then and I wasn't watching as much, but it'll be interesting. Cause he comes from a similar, he's not similar background. I mean, he was like really, really self-made from Austria. I mean, to come here and do what he did was crazy, you know? So it'll be interesting, kind of his personality on the show and what he like kind of brings to it.
Right. I thought that maybe Mr. Wonderful would be a good choice because he is under that Mark Burnett umbrella coming from Shark Tank. So I thought perhaps that might be a good move for them. They have that relationship built and he would be a tough one in the boardroom. And I feel like, you know, he would replace like white businessman Donald Trump, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
But Schwarzenegger will be different, and I mean, I'm gonna watch either way. Celebrity Apprentice is one of my all-time favorite shows.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, obviously the money theme song, but I also, being a film composer, I love the dun 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 dun.
The music cues in that,
yeah, I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, I mean, because I don't watch a lot of reality TV, but when I did, like, that was one of the ones I watched, and I loved the music for it. I loved the whole thing. That first season, where then like the whole shock of like pulling back the whole boardroom, and then the audience was there. Because after that, that was so amazing. Because no one saw that coming.
Yeah.
After that, it was like, oh, okay, I'm looking forward to the end because it's gonna do this whole crazy final party thing.
Yeah.
That first season was amazing. It was amazing. Like, I liked Donald Trump then. And now it's like, I don't even, like, who is this other person now?
Yeah.
That's what's so crazy about it.
I've always found him entertaining until about
Very, yeah.
6 months ago, and then I just found him dangerous.
Then it went off, then it went off the rails rather quickly.
Yeah, yeah. What is that sound of what is the name of that sting that they use? It goes, it's like when someone says something controversial.
Yeah, exactly.
What is that? I don't know.
Yeah, probably that's the sound designer's job. That's like when the composer is like, no, it's okay, you take care of that. Like,
Either
they made it themselves or it's in some, you know, library and Logic or something like that.
Yeah, that's my favorite part of reality TV is when they have to have like a beat and then they do like a jump zoom in to like, you know, with a reveal or someone says something shocking. Like, I just love the dramatics of it.
No, it's true. Have you seen on Netflix recently, there's a show that Judd Apatow did called Love?
Oh, I've seen it advertised quite a bit. I have not watched it yet.
There's an episode, a few episodes in, where some of the main character's friends are at this like party with him in his apartment, and they're like talking about, oh yeah, the editors on reality shows are really the gods. Like they make the show because they make things that don't even necessarily happen. Occur. Yeah. Like you know, the stare downs you see aren't necessarily in context of what's going on.
Exactly.
So I thought that was hilarious how they're like talking about that and breaking down like the you know, a reality TV show into how they sort of juxtapose certain images and the sound effects then to create this extra level of tension that wasn't necessarily even there to begin with.
Exactly.
Which is so fun.
Yup. That's like, so every show on television is guilty of that. Unscripted space.
Even scripted stuff, yeah. They have to jump the shark once in a while.
It's fascinating.
I've watched Grey's Anatomy for since the beginning, and that one also to me feels a little bit recently like they've run out of rope. I feel sometimes some shows they go on forever, and I love it still, and I still keep watching it regardless. But a show eventually is like, we don't really know what to do anymore now. Okay, let's just go do this now.
Isn't there like one or two originals left on that show? What's it like?
Yeah. It's like Grey's Anatomy, and like.
Like an extra, somebody in the background, the
old chief of staff and like the new chief of staff, like they're like the and Alex Karev, I think, like so it's like maybe four or five people are left, I think, out of the whole thing because they're all dying. There's a plane crash, car crash, boat crash. It's a bunch of crashes, fires, explosions. You know, limbs going here and there.
Oh
but,
Lord,
yeah.
Well, we've talked about the crazy election. We've talked about the race in Celebrity Apprentice. Let's talk about. Another mutual admiration society, the award show season.
Man. Is it over now for films, or is there now music and now there's
it's
other
now
things
music,
still?
But I thought it was over completely, and I did some research. I just want to read this list. In the month of January through April, we'll say, this is like, you know, this is after Emmys, this is like just this year alone, there's been several award shows. This isn't even all of them, but just the ones that were on my radar. There was the Producers Guild Awards, the Screen Actors Guild Awards, the Directors Guild Awards, the Writers Guild Awards, the BAFTA Film Awards, the Grammys, Film Independent Spirit Awards, the Oscars, and now coming up, well, they just had it, actually, the Kids' Choice Awards on Nickelodeon. They go from the Oscars to the Kids' Choice Awards.
Yeah.
And then there's the MTV Woodies. I'm not watching anything called that. That's for like new music artists. Still not interested. Then there's the American Country Music Awards. And then the most useless of them all, the iHeart Radio Music Awards. I mean,
I don't even, because that started with, I thought, Kiss FM, right?
Yeah.
iHeart Radio.
Yeah.
And now it's like they've obviously attached various stations in LA to it, or maybe across the country. I have no idea.
Yeah, they have like a network, like they have the app and they connect to all of these different stations. Yeah.
Because, I mean, at some point, I mean, after the Grammys and after like all the other music awards, the American Music Awards, the Country Music Awards, the Latin Music Awards, the...
Oh, those are coming, yeah.
What is the niche that the iHeartRadio one does? Because, I mean, I listen to Kiss FM a lot. I don't even know that one.
That's like for the fans.
It's like a radio station kind of thing?
Like a satellite radio thing? It's just an excuse to televise performances. And it's all the same songs that we can turn the radio on and listen to. So it's like, to me, it's like just watching the same people do the same things. And Nicki Minaj accepted an award. And she didn't even know what it was for. And that's when you know it's just too much.
Now you're literally just, you know, come to an award. You know, we'll pay you tons of money to come to our show. You know, for promotion and I don't know.
Yeah,
and the business side of it definitely eludes me. I don't get all that stuff. But
yeah, no, I'm not interested in the awards. And in fact, I covered very little on this show purposefully because I just don't have the passion for it, and I don't want to come across phony or try to like sell something that I'm just not into. This is Grant's Rant. My rant of the day is I am just completely sick of these award shows.
Grant's Rant of the Day.
I can't be bothered watching anymore. I really am not interested. I mean, I like even the Oscars, I suffered through those. I really did.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I had like a mixed feeling about, especially this one with Chris Rock being the host and Oscars So White, the whole trending thing about that. Because I felt like they did a great job at the beginning of it talking about that and even the few segments after that. But then it just felt like they were then making fun of it almost by talking about it now too much, and this type of skits they were doing were like kind of almost like a Daily Show kind of sketch, like the one where they're interviewing people outside of like Compton, I think.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was fine, but it was like when you do it that much, now it feels like you're almost insulting the very reason why you're talking about it to me. Maybe I'm a white person, so I can't necessarily speak to it to the same extent, but I mean, it came to me off like, now I feel uncomfortable, like not that I feel uncomfortable, but like I would feel awkward for a person who is trying to promote diversity and equality, because now it's like, you've gone so far now the other way. Now it's just like a little bit strange to me. That's what it came off as. Because the first half was like fantastic. It was great. I got it. And it was like really well done. Mm-hmm. But then it just felt like, okay, this is now cool. Yeah. You got it.
That was the most long-winded show. I couldn't even finish it.
I saw your video about when Ennio Morricone got the award. Because I agree. I went to like the Oscar nomination reception the day before. And so I met like John Williams and Ennio Morricone and all those guys. Like sitting in the booth like right there like when they're accepting their nominations at the party. But obviously Ennio Morricone is Italian and he only like speaks Italian. So his translator, I think it was even his son, but his translator had to like basically speak halfway through for him. And, you know, Pharrell and Quincy were up there and everything like that. So that was pretty funny.
I'm not interested. I mean, it's tough. I'm doing a show called Hollywood Talk. Yeah. And I can't acknowledge
it is kind
them.
Of the apex of Hollywood is this final sort of award of the season. And then it starts all over again.
Exactly. I'm not ready for the Emmys. At work, they're already starting to get ready for submissions. Oh, and I'm like, God. And then it's like, you know, figure out how we're going to do the For Your Consideration DVDs. And I'm like, you know, that those come in like a avalanche. So it's like, I'm not ready to wrap my mind around the Emmys just yet. So I need a minute, but I can't get over them. It's just too much.
It has felt like over the years, it's like every other week there's another award show and it's like, no, but we just really, I can't handle it. I really don't watch most of them. I like watching the Oscars. I'll watch like Golden Globes and actually the BAFTAs. The BAFTAs are really good. Have you ever seen the BAFTAs?
No, I've seen specials where they highlight programs.
But Stephen Fry has been like the host, I think for years now, but I mean, those are good, and that's a quick show. I think it really is like a 2 hour show. It's
on BBC.
Yeah, it's so good. Like I actually only starting last year. Actually, I started watching it, and this year I watched it again. That's the show to watch to me. Like that one because it's funny. I love the British dry humor. I love all that stuff. So like for me, like that show. If you want to watch a show that still gives out awards but is still funny and interesting and quicker, BAFTAs is probably my favorite.
Now, I assume it's also a different list. It's not the same people collecting the same
awards. Yeah, and obviously there are some like special awards like upcoming British star and best British movie. So they do a few British, obviously, awards for the BAFTAs because it is in England and everything. But overall, they still give out like the major awards. Like I think the best actors and actresses, they still get the best actor, you know, and score. And most of the awards are still similar. And some of them probably aren't shown on TV. They go on and on and on with you know, all the different awards categories. But I will say, I mean, one way I feel like they could cut down, you know, and obviously I score quite a few short films still, but certainly like cutting out some of like the, at least on screen, like some of the short film categories that, you know, those would be easy fixes maybe to speed it up. Obviously I'd like to keep the score on TV. That'd be fine. Obviously if you have an Italian 87-year-old composer, it's going to make things a little slower, a little more complicated. But that being said, in general, that's not been the case. It's actually been much younger guys that have been winning and new, fresh faces, which is kind of fun. But his was actually overdue because he actually already has a Lifetime Achievement Oscar, Ennio Morricone. And then he finally won his first, after like five nominations, he's won his first Oscar ever at 87. Good so, you know, because he was the guy, he was the good, bad, and the ugly, like the like that's the guy, that's the composer, him, that's him. So, you know, he's been around forever. I mean, he's a Hallmark film composer, honestly, but if you didn't know that, you're just like, what is this guy doing? Is this? So it definitely is. I don't know. I don't know how the Oscars fix because it's always tough. But I did like the fact that the orchestra was underneath the stage this time because sometimes they pipe it in from like Capitol Records, and it's really weird. It's like they're just like in another like part
remote,
of town.
Like
it's very strange. Mm-hmm. But I appreciated that because you know I obviously want to keep live musicians doing well and alive. I don't like to just use sample libraries when I write music, so that's my own little thing.
Final thought on award shows for me. I used to be very into them. I seat filled for a bunch of them, and it just killed it for me. You know, because they are the longest thing. It is live to tape. Well, not really live to tape, but it is a live broadcast, most of them. And when they have the commercial breaks, you don't feel like you're in any type of a break. It just feels like one extended long show
just
of awards.
Go.
And I mean the technical Emmys, I think there's something like over 60 awards given out. And so that is a very love. You think of all the people.
The music category has been downgraded to the technical Emmys.
That's terrible because I think the reality TV award has been moved up to the telecast.
Yeah.
So yes,
because it's what people want. They don't care about music. It's just this thing that happens in the background, so no one necessarily knows if you don't know, you don't know, and you're not going to appreciate. But everybody's like, oh, but the reality TV show, you know,
together. Yeah, they want to see the men who do the boats. What is that? The fishing, they win every year. Catch
or something.
Yeah, Deadliest Catch. Yeah, they want to see those men come up. Amazing Race. Yeah, the usuals. Yeah. Too much for me. But I need to talk about Lindsay Lohan. Okay. I haven't talked about her in a minute, and I love to keep tabs on the whole Lohan family. So Michael is speaking out to Page Six, Lindsay Lohan's father, and there's a new man in Lindsay's life, a billionaire. As these women age, they manage to always locate a billionaire somewhere overseas. Must be nice. There's none here, unless if you're into Donald.
Yeah,
but
he's taken, I guess, for now.
Yeah, for now. But Lindsay is 29, and she's with a 22-year-old man, Igor. Now, I don't think the age difference is that bad. However, him being 22, you know, guys 22 years old aren't really looking for forever.
Yeah.
You know. So Michael, of course, has especially to speak out.
Billionaire, I imagined it. I mean, like, yeah. Is he a billionaire or is like an heir to a
probably
billionaire?
Probably an heir.
It's like he didn't actually, like, a 22, man. He's like Christian Grey or something. Like, this is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he probably hasn't done a damn thing. But Michael is saying to Page Six, oh, he's not a good influence. He's a great influence. And it's like, you're so pulling on people. You know, like, you're so playing people with a statement like that. Yeah. I don't like that. Typical Lohan nonsense. But yeah, I mean, basically, he's trying to revive Lindsay Lohan's career, as many people have. The mighty O couldn't even do it herself, Oprah Winfrey. But I guess this billionaire is going to do what he can. And in doing so, he's introducing her to the Russian culture, Russian cuisine, and they've attended Russian bathhouses together. So, I mean, I don't know if that will revive anyone's film career. But, I mean, I guess she's having fun, and we know Lindsay likes to have some fun.
Yeah, I don't know what connections he has. She's going to start starring in, like, Russian films or something.
Yeah, maybe. She better start getting, like, Rosetta Stone going or something.
I mean, it's definitely unfortunate. I mean, I definitely loved her, you know, in, like, the Parent Trap remake and like, Mean Girls and all of those back in the day. Like, she was great, and it is weird. Like, she just kind of fell off and then never really quite came back. She was, like, a very different... Yeah. It was like, totally flipped. Like, her whole thing... Maybe she's always like that, and she just now had the ability to then go out and party and be that person.
Mm-hmm.
It is unfortunate, like, especially when somebody starts as, like, sort of a child actress, child actor, just takes that nosedive, because it usually does go one way or the other. Usually they don't go quietly into the night.
It's either
they keep becoming more successful as an adult, either as a star or behind the scenes, you know, like Ron Howard, or they, you know,
She keeps relating herself and her life to Elizabeth Taylor. You know, do you find any real similarities between those two, or I think it's all kind of in her head?
Did she play Elizabeth Taylor in
the
movie?
She did.
Yeah,
so probably, in a Lifetime television movie.
She was, like,
movie.
Tapping into her, like, method acting or something. No, I could feel it when I played her. No. I don't know. I don't know Elizabeth Taylor's story, honestly, that well either, so I couldn't speak to that, but it doesn't seem that way
from
what I've seen. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't seem to get as much news now. I feel like now people are focused on
I know
other
I'm
people
hating
at this
it
point.
Because I need more news. Right.
There's, like, not as much to talk about. She moved to Russia to get news now. I mean, she's going to Putin, I guess. Maybe he'll help her.
Oh, Lord. Who knows? Maybe she'll be the new ambassador over there.
That would be amazing.
Who knows? Lindsay, I'm keeping an eye
Shirley
on you.
Shirley Temple was an ambassador for the United States for a long time. So, hey, anything's possible.
Stranger things have happened in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants__rants. And now for the one-on-one.
So, Alexander, let's talk about some topics in your life. Hot topics.
My hot topics, my work.
I want to hear about how music found you, how composing found you. How did this all start?
It's weird because when I started, like, taking piano lessons in first grade, I actually hated practicing piano. I hated going to the piano. I didn't hate music, but I just hated having to practice piano, doing scales, doing all that stuff.
I didn't enjoy it either.
It was not fun. But then the first time I wanted to go to the piano was in sixth grade. My piano teacher had me, asked me to sort of write a piece of music because she knew that I like to kind of do that. And so once I started to write music, that's when I couldn't get away from the piano. That's when I couldn't get away from wanting to write music, was creating the music, not just practicing scales and all that kind of stuff. Because I'm not as much of like some virtuoso like player as much as like, not that I'm a virtuoso composer, but like I like to compose. I like to create new stuff. And I like all sorts of music. I take inspiration from film scores for sure, but I also love to listen to top 40 radio. I love to listen to hip hop. I love to listen to any kind of music. I love to hybrid this kind of stuff, because as a film composer, you also need to be a chameleon. And what led me to film composing in particular was I was, watching the Star Wars movies as a kid, and I was like, well, how is that music really captivates and leads the audience on such an adventure and such an emotion that without it, at the time I didn't necessarily know that, you know, music was necessarily attached to picture in the way it was, but once I realized, like, that's what I want to do for sure. I want to be the person in charge of how people feel during a movie. Like, if it's a funny scene, maybe you do some funny music. Whether it's action music, whatever it is, sad, that really pulls the heartstrings. You know, so that's what I've always loved about music, is that it does sort of subtly manipulate like emotions in people. So that's the part I love about it.
Right. Now, are you mainly working within the film space? Is that necessarily the goal? Or, you know, I feel like you're pretty versatile in what
pretty
you score.
Pretty versatile, yeah. I like to do different mediums. I mean, film and TV would be the big two, you know, if I was, scoring seasons of stuff while also scoring a couple features a year eventually, like, that would be obviously the dream, you know, give or take. But, you know, you dabble in all sorts of things. And especially at this point in my career, you're still working with younger filmmakers, on short films. You know, and there's, you know, the promise of, you know, you make the short film, then they make the feature, you score the pilot, you score the season. That's the quid pro quo that you sort of go through, because usually, obviously, they can't necessarily pay you as much up front, but that is the sort of as they go up, you go up with them, essentially, which is always fun. It's really fun, because I've worked with some people since high school, and they're finally starting to really, like, peak to some really interesting projects. Like, one guy, I just finished this Harry Potter fan film called Severus Snape and the Marauders, and it's blown up again. I mean, he did one before this called The Greater Good, and it almost has 4 million views on YouTube. This one has been out less than 2 weeks, and it has like 330,000 views on YouTube, and everybody loves it. Like, it's changed their opinion on like Severus Snape and stuff, so it's like really cool, and people love the music and everything. But that guy worked with since high school. Now I'm seeing this happening, and then he wants to go and make his next project is going to be, of course, a feature now finally, so that'll be fun. I have another guy since high school that actually was my one-to-one teacher at Apple. Like, I was learning like Apple products, like Mac products. I went into the Apple store, and he was my one-to-one teacher teaching me like a film, Final Cut Pro. And I was like, oh, it seems like you are, you know how to do movie stuff. Do you movies? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, okay, can I maybe score one of your short films? Are you making any films right now? I was like, yeah. Now fast forward, probably sometime, if they do end up shooting in the summer, I'll be scoring his first feature in fall. Wow. So it's really amazing. Mm-hmm. That's like over 6-7 years, the arc of a relationship and like building with somebody and seeing them grow and having them have patience within you to grow as well, and you get better as they get better. Absolutely. That's really amazing, because that's what it is. I mean, at the end of the day, obviously there's the industry and there's all the other things we talked about award shows, but it's a relationship between two people just as much as a friendship or a romantic relationship. Like, it's a relationship that you build and you grow, and there's a give and take, and every relationship is different.
Definitely.
Some directors have a very different style of how they would direct you, in terms of like, they're going to tell you like at minute 2:32, 5 frames, change that beat or get rid of this beat or add in this, versus another one's just sort of telling you, you know, colors, you know, I want this color, I want yellow, I want blue, or I want to feel this, I want to feel that, you know? And so, and you have to, it's almost like another language, director speak. Right. You have to translate what people are thinking.
Right. As y'all know, Alexander has created and composed our theme for Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk. I really don't give much direction, because I feel as though that, you know, I want to give freedom. Like I said, as a person who creates my own stuff, my own videos and stuff like that, I don't really want to be holden to too much, because if I have a certain vision, I like to execute that myself. So I purposefully kind of always give space, even with like getting like the logos made and things like that. Like, I had a general, like, I knew I wanted the Hollywood sign, but I didn't know like exactly how it was going to come all together. What do you prefer? Do you like having like that total freedom, or somewhere in the middle?
I think it's funny, because it depends on the person. It depends on if I've worked with them a lot. If I've never worked with somebody before, I'm usually very slow to give my opinions, especially if they don't like something. I'll kind of like go with the flow, build up some clout with them, build up like a rapport, and then when I really feel strongly about it, like, no, we really, like, I'll explain to them why I did this, and there's usually a good reason. Unless they give me some backstory into that particular scene in a movie, why that doesn't make sense, after I tell them what I was thinking, then it's like, okay, cool. Didn't know that. Now I know that. Mm-hmm. That makes sense then. But otherwise, because I work with various directors, as I said, some of them are very open and free about what they do. They don't really say too much. Sometimes I'll do a, you know, what I sort of call a hole-in-one score, where I'll score it, especially like a short film, not usually featured, there's going to be some notes, but some short films I've gotten to the point where either I know the person or I just happen to tap into exactly what they wanted, and it's a hole-in-one and it's done. They don't say anything, no notes, boom, boom, boom. And it's like, it's great. Wow. It's like soccer, like, goal! Oh, that's like, yeah. It's an amazing feeling. And then other ones, they'll send me like just pages and pages of notes with a time code. And I think when I was younger and a little more naive, I was like annoyed, you know, because I had the ego and I was like, they don't know enough. They don't know what I know. But a lot of those people were also older than me at the time as well. And now I realize, as I'm now their age at the time that they were doing it, I appreciate it because it's succinct. Now that I'm really working, like I make money, like this is what I do for a living, literally. This isn't my side job. This isn't my hobby. This isn't my, you know, this is literally what I do to pay the bills. I appreciate it because I need to get in, get out. I need, you know, because usually you're on it for a few weeks, maybe a few months. You don't have time to move around and stuff. Like some projects have like longer extended timelines, but generally speaking, you know, it's usually pretty quick in and out once I come into the process. Mm-hmm. So I do appreciate now the specific notes when it does come to that. Overall, I would probably prefer a more free thing. I like to, really lead the charge for something original. I have other filmmakers that sometimes have temp music to begin with. Temp music is essentially other film scores from previous film scores and films that they already interject into it. And if you do it badly, you then find out that, that's not really what they wanted musically. They don't want an orchestra. They want just like a kazoo or something, you know, something like that. But like something totally different. They want a rap score instead of a pop score versus an orchestral score. Other ones are very good at it. Other ones, they want the orchestra and they did exactly what it's similar to the notes. It tells me exactly what that I need. I don't need to now guess what they're thinking. Because that's usually the hardest part at the beginning of a project is sometimes you just don't know, especially if you haven't worked with the person before and you're starting from scratch. You don't, what they're saying is not necessarily what they mean and what they want. Mm-hmm. And then you find that out. You don't want to find that out after you've already written the whole score and now you're having to go backwards through the whole thing. I have this new studio now, so I love to bring people into the studio. I have like a second chair, like a rolling chair right next to the studio because the couch is a little further away in the room. And so I like to have the intimate, like, you know, they listen to the score, they see what I'm doing and we can interact as we work with notes. But in other cases, you know, either they're not close by in LA, because LA, you know, driving in LA, I mean, we could do a whole rant on that.
Yeah.
I use Dropbox. And so, like, because I work with people across the state, across the country, across internationally. So it's like I don't have always the luxury of being able to have them in the room to quickly brainstorm and to fix an issue if there's an issue. So there's so many different variants. I like freedom. I like to lead the discussion. I like to see the movie without music, preferably. And then sort of like come up with the music and see if they like that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll, you know, it always depends on the personality of the person and what they really want.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah. No, for a song that you composed and created, like the theme for this show, about how long does something like that take?
A jingle, it depends, because it starts just like a film score would, is what are we looking for? So that's usually the longest thing. And with, because obviously this wasn't really the theme, it's not really an orchestral theme.
Mm-hmm.
With an orchestral theme, I'll just bring up my orchestral template and then you're just kind of going to work at it. So the time I take when I'm doing something that's more electronic and something like that, even whether it's a score or a jingle, it's the sound design. It's making the kick drum sound a certain way. It's making the synth sound a certain way in a very edgy or whatever the tone you want it to be. So I spend a lot of time when it's a hybrid score creating the sound, and then usually the writing is usually much quicker thereafter. Because usually, especially jingle, it's a jingle and you repeat it a couple times and you kind of add a couple variants. So a lot of like when you're doing orchestral work, the work happens once you get going because you're writing for so many instruments. When you're doing something that's more like electronic and hybrid, usually a lot more of my time, especially whether it's a film score or a jingle, it's creating the sound to sound really cool, because that's what is going to get people. It's not going to be the composition as much. It's going to be the tone of the sound that you created, because everybody knows what an orchestra is. You can't really change most of the time. Hans Zimmer would like to, obviously, more times than not, to try to like change the sound of the orchestra to make it a little more interesting here or there. But generally speaking, that's what you have. You have an orchestra versus sound design, electronics. You really want to make something different and fresh, because everybody's heard the same kick drums and snares that everybody has in their libraries, but you want to like EQ it and compress it and do different things to it to make it more interesting.
Yeah. So like, how much did it take? Hours? Did it take weeks? Days?
I think once I had the theme and the sound design, I think it took a few hours.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, attending Berklee College of Music in Boston, also, you took upon some internships, which seemed to be quite interesting. Names that, you know, the average person would know. Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer, you mentioned him earlier. What were those experiences like? What was it like to work with those guys? Did you have any one-on-one time with them?
It was very cool. The first one I did was, like, the first year out of college in the summer. Like, 6 weeks, I think, I was at Remote Control Productions. And that was fun. I was a runner. I was basically just getting water and people's mm-hmm. food and coffee and all that kind of stuff. But one time it was really cool. It was working on a project. It was like a weekend and nobody was around. Really, it was a really quiet weekend because usually it's very busy. Usually you never really interrupt him. You don't go in there unless you're like getting him coffee or something right, or dinner right. order or stuff like that. But so because I was one of the younger interns there. Most of them most interns usually are like seniors when they're graduating. You know, that's usually the typical kind of thing. You get your senior internship. But I did this when I was a freshman going into a sophomore in college. And so some of the more brave older interns that were there, like one of them asked, like, oh, you know, there's nothing really going on. Is it okay if I just like sit on your couch right behind his main studio desk? Because like I have like 3 monitors, 4 monitors. He has like 5 or 6 monitors all around. It's a huge room, huge bet, everything. It's yeah. like, it's crazy. But so he's like, yeah, sure, whatever. And then all slowly but surely, then me and like one other intern realized, oh, I mean, he's in there. So we all three of us just sat down on the couch behind him while he's writing his music. And what I thought was the most fascinating, it was what clicked with me the most, sort of my epiphany was when he was writing the music.
And this was Hans?
This was Hans. This okay. was Hans Zimmer. Yeah, yeah. exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so when I was sitting there on the couch and watching him like write just one particular cue, just like I would, he was dragging one of the, like the MIDI notes. Chromatically, like da 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 da, like what I would say is a pretty like generic thing that I would have to do, which I think like, oh, some master Hans Zimmer, like he probably just waves his hands and the music appears, like da 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 da, da, you know, it's just like it comes out of nowhere. No, like these composers, I mean, there's still mystery and there's so much talent and technique that they've built up over the years, but when they need to create a cue, they still have to do the same thing that I have to do. Like it's not that was the moment where it was like, okay, there's not so much distance. There's still quite a bit of water between us, but it's not like a Atlantic Ocean. Like I can see the land. I can see it. It's on the horizon. So that was really cool. And also even one time, I think like after I got him his coffee, like in the evening, I think I sat like on one of the back chairs when a director came in actually to actually go over it, like what I would do. And that was really fascinating watching him, you know, ad lib and work and improvise on the spot when the director didn't necessarily like something, and like knowing, okay, this is what even Hans Zimmer has to deal with. Like everything isn't all, you know, roses, and everything is not wonderful all the time. They're still working. They're still doing what they have to mm-hmm. do to just like every other film composer. So that was really cool. With Danny Elfman, that one was an interesting one. I got called by his, agent through a Berklee connection. And we talked and, she put me in touch with like the sort of his studio manager. And so basically for a whole summer, a couple of years ago, you know, like that concert he does now, the Danny Elfman, music from Danny Elfman from the films of Tim Burton.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Doesn't he do that at the Hollywood Bowl?
Exactly. Hollywood Bowl. And I think like the Nokia Theater, like at Halloween mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And he'd like sing like as Jack Skellington and everything. I was one of the main interns involved in taking all of his old paper scores that were never translated into the digital notation programs like Sibelius and Finale into digital notation, so as orchestrators like Steve Bartek could then sort of rework the music mm-hmm. if they wanted to, like into a suite rather than it just being each cue. You could like create like a 10-minute piece of music all in one, rather and connect the ends of the pieces into the next piece.
Uh-huh,
and correct. So that was really cool because the first one that I had to transcribe was the overture for Nightmare Before Christmas. Yeah. So I'm literally transcribing my childhood, you know, and it's just like, it's crazy. And that sometimes, cool. yeah, it was very surreal for sure. And once in a while, you know, like every job, no matter how amazing a job is, whether I'm doing it for myself or for someone else of note, you get a little bored because especially what you're doing is you're just taking a bunch of like black and white paper. And sometimes the legibility is very messy, so it's very hard sometimes. Like, is that an E? Is that a D? I don't know. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes what I would do to re-motivate myself was be to play that track, actually. Because I wouldn't be listening to the music. I'm just taking the black and white notes and putting it into the digital notation. And then you listen to the music and you're like, aha, this is why I'm doing this. This is amazing. This is so cool. I can't believe I'm doing this. So that was really fun.
Comes alive.
Yeah. Because most of the time I was actually working in my studio doing the transcription. But there was like one week I went to his studio. I think I want to say it's like in Silver Lake or something like that. I'm not sure. But it was amazing. Going into like this like private little garage thing. I think apparently it used to be owned by like Kiefer Sutherland, I think. Mm-hmm. But it was a cool place. He had his own like private apartment. They had like just gymnastics. It was crazy. Really cool place. And it was the weird thing when I first met him, sort of in a weird subtle way, like I didn't know he was in town. I thought he was in London. And so I was talking with the studio manager. We're trying to like brainstorm like my time there. It was my first day in the studio for the week, and we're trying to like figure out what we're doing. And then we were talking to one of the orchestrators about some cue for something, and then all of a sudden I hear like from behind me this very surprisingly low voice like interjecting into something, and I turn around and I'm like, oh, that guy looks like Danny Elfman. And then I'm like, but he was like wearing like a t-shirt and like shorts and like his sandals. He was like really chill. He didn't have his black garb and like his normal glasses and everything on, you know? And then I turn around again. I'm like, that is Danny Elfman. Like, so he was there. He's in the studio. And I didn't realize that at the time. So it was a really weird first introduction to him, because I was like not expecting it, you know? Because when you're going there, because when I went there, I wasn't expecting him to be there. So I was like, that's fine. This is going to be chill, super chill, whatever. I'm here for the week. Maybe he'll come in later in the week. This is the same thing with Hans Zimmer. Like at the time when I first started, he wasn't there for like a week, and then finally he showed up, and like first time I met him, I was talking to his assistant, and he was like up on the slightly higher level going into a studio, and he was like, oh, hey, you know, hey Hans, here's Alex. And I was like, he's literally on a higher level than me. And I'm like shaking, he's like, hi.
Wow. Yeah.
So it's like one of those like, no, please, I'm not worthy. But yeah, so those are some fun things. And then the other crazy thing was, I think one of the days I was there, it was at lunchtime. So I was like ordering lunch for people, and like, the one person was ordering like a kale salad, and like the other guy there was like ordering a kale salad, and I think I'd already ordered like a cheeseburger with like bacon and stuff like that. And then, because I didn't also at the time know that Danny was going to be there, so then he also ordered a kale salad. So I'm just like sitting here like chomping on this greasy burger, and everybody else is like, you know, doing this, and then like Danny's like, oh, I'm going to go off and get my sprouts, because he was even more healthy. Like he's like in really good shape, like because he's like in his 60s, like he's in like fantastic shape. Which is shocking, because most film composers are pretty like they sit all day in a chair in the
they
dark.
Don't see the sun.
They don't see the sun. They're very pale. They're usually a little more on the overweight side, you know, because it's hard to like have the time to work out and stuff like that. I try to fit it in more often than not, but it doesn't always work that way, especially when you're on a big project. It all falls out the window.
Yeah, it's like the first thing to go with me.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, forget it. Like, you know, if I can get one thing in during the week, like if I can get a yoga class in, that's like a, like, I'm like, I'm doing good that week.
I got those endorphins.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, that's success. Ooh, big deal.
Yeah.
So, you know, I checked out your IMDb page, and of course your website. You have a lot of constant work. What's the secret to just keep finding these jobs and to keep going?
Yeah, you know, it's various places. Because when I first started, I was contacting people at colleges, so I would like contact all the chairs of colleges and put up flyers in a couple places. But
a hustler.
Yeah. Oh,
that's what this show's about. I like it.
Oh, there's like I spend more of my time still right now like hustling than even doing projects a lot of times. Yeah. Especially in the early part of the year, I find everything's very quiet. Like only now things are starting to pick up for me, but the first couple months it was like, it was just like nothing's going on.
I think that was the state of the industry in general too.
Yeah, probably because of award seasons.
It was a scary time, the beginning of this year, because they say at the top of the year is where a lot of projects are greenlit and money comes in for the first quarter. I didn't have that experience either.
Yeah, no, it is weird because I'm in post production, so for me, I'm not going to see that project until it's finished. So usually they're doing the pre production at the beginning of the year, production in the spring, and then they're starting to do the post-production in the summer and the fall, especially for somebody like me. I'm sure if you're on A-list film composer, you're working year-round, but for a person a few notches down the totem pole, it doesn't quite work that way. You know, there's various places. I mean, I go on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, and there's like a film tab, so that's one of the ones I did like starting last year, and I still do it, where I'll then kind of, it takes a lot of tenacity and like kind of like dedication to keep doing it every few weeks, because it turns over. Like what I learned was, I tried to like do it when I first started doing it, I was doing it every week. But I was finding like the same projects are there, because they're there for a few months, and it's like I'm not gonna like just go on every week and the same thing. So I'd like alternate between like Kickstarter, Indiegogo, find a few others, and then you know other stuff is like literally on Facebook. I just have friends and I see them posting about a film or something that they're either acting in or they're directing or whatever, and I'm like, hey, what's up? Like it's so weird. Like with like like personal life, I would never like do that kind of thing. But with work, I have like no shame. Like I am just, most of my work has been gotten because like some of my biggest clients have been gotten because I had the chutzpah to just send out that cold email. Yeah. Just like, either I'm a fan of this person or I saw you did this thing, you know, and you hope after a while, if your reel is good and your work is good, because they get a lot of this stuff. And I hear that a lot when they respond back to me, but usually they respond back saying, I've got a lot of this stuff, but your stuff is really good. Like I'm really impressed with that kind of stuff. So that's what you hope is you're building, and you do have to eventually become a bit discerning when taking on projects eventually. Eventually, you can't do the smaller short films and the smaller student films. Or, you know, if you do that, like only the master's thesis ones, the ones that they're about to like graduate, like because those are usually high end. Those look like the real deal. Because after a while, you know.
Well, that's good. You have to evolve, you know?
If you're hustling enough, the argument is, well, I'm only doing good projects. It's not like you can like offer me more money. Like I'm only looking for good projects. So like all these different things that I'm looking for are not necessarily just to score something for credit. It's always that funny thing, exposure. How can I spend exposure? I don't know how to do it. I get plenty of exposure on the projects I do now because I work with like some YouTube people and stuff like that, and so they'll put like my links in their stuff, like the Harry Potter thing as well. I've gotten like tons of traffic to my thing. For me, like getting 1,000 plays in a day is crazy, you know. For some people that's nothing, but like for me, if I get 100, like that's a good day. When I get 1,000, it's like, what happened? Oh my god. This is something happened.
I can relate to that.
Yeah, it's fun.
So as we look to the future, is there anything you want to promote? I know you mentioned that you were working on a web series for the CW.
Yeah. I just finished it at the end of last year. It was really cool. It's called Saving the Human Race by a guy named Stian Hofsted. He's also a YouTube guy. But it's funny. It's a zombie apocalypse comedy. This guy went to Columbia College in New York, and a couple years ago, I saw on Indiegogo, was doing the hustle thing, I saw on Indiegogo this project called Viking Vampires, and it intrigued me because my last name's Arnson, I'm Norwegian, so like, okay, Vikings, I kind of relate to that. Yeah. And obviously vampires, especially then and even still now, are pretty popular. So like, oh, I'll email this guy. So I emailed him, and he got back to me. He's like, oh, well, we already have a composer on that, but how about you do this other thing? And it is a little short film called Imagine Apt, which is going to be playing at the North Hollywood Film Festival this next week. It actually starred Una Lawrence, who is the daughter of Jake Gyllenhaal in Southpaw this last summer, which is pretty cool. And I scored like that short film, and I scored one other short film. And then he said, oh yeah, I'm doing this web series, but I'm not sure, you know, what's going on. And then all of a sudden, I start hearing I went to like a festival for one of the short films, and then he was like, oh, you gonna be busy next week? I'm like, no, yeah, I'm fine. Like, what's up? And then I start scoring this CW web series, and like the actors in it, Benjamin Popick, who's been like a very bit character on Walking Dead a few seasons ago, and also now like a recurring role in Into the Badlands, and then also Jessica Liu, who actually was one of the main like recurring characters in Awkward, which is really cool. I didn't even recognize her actually when I was scoring, and I was like, she looks very familiar, because I used to watch like Awkward, like I knew like one of the girls, Julian Rose Reed, on the show, and so, but I didn't recognize her, and then all of a sudden I was checking her IMDb, and then I saw that, I'm like, oh my god, that's so cool. I want to get in contact with her. I'm probably going to contact Stian for email, but because she did a great job, and it's so funny, it's so well done, it's definitely one of the best things I've done, and it's going to come out I think sometime in the spring, they said spring. I emailed them recently just because I wanted to possibly give more information than that, but they said they don't have an exact date yet, but hopefully it'll be going on a website called thecwc.com. Seed, like seed, like a plant. Yeah, seed. SEED.com. Because they do have some original shows on there, and it's, I guess, also an incubator. So the thing is, I feel like hopefully it's a win-win. I think it's good enough where it'd be renewed for a second season online, regardless. But I'm hoping, hey, if it's really good, they'll take it to real show or something. Yeah. That would be amazing, of course. Yeah. For me, like, no complaints. Course. Everybody would.
I think you can find the time.
Yeah, I'll work it into my busy schedule.
Yes. Well, where else can we check out some more of your work and keep up with your projects?
Yeah, I mean, my main website is my name, www.alexanderarnson.com, A-R-N-T-Z-E-N. And that takes you to my links to my SoundCloud. I think there used to be this like Norwegian writer named Alex Arnson like 6 or 7 years ago before I had a web presence. And since then, I've just sort of taken over most. If you type in Alexander Arnson, unless you're in Norway, you're probably going to see anything that relates to me, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on SoundCloud, whether it's on Vimeo, YouTube, like whatever the thing is.
You're everywhere then.
Because it's important. And that's another thing that I've been doing recently. I've actually tried to make my Facebook page, I try to run it like a YouTube channel, So like once a week, no matter what, whether it's just posting a picture, whether it's posting a new piece of music, whether it's posting a video from a trailer of a movie I did, or a direct link to the full movie, like the Harry Potter thing, I found that that has also gotten me more work. I actually scored a pilot last summer from a guy who I went to high school with, but he was like three grades below me and I didn't know him all that well. And he never commented or liked anything on my Facebook when I was posting. But then all of a sudden this last summer, he's like, oh yeah, I've been following your stuff for 5 or 6 years. It was half a decade later. I want you to score my pilot. Like, he was waiting, I guess, or whatever. Like, he finally had something and he was like, I want you to score it. So, but it just builds up subliminally because you see the people that comment and like on your stuff, but you don't necessarily know who else is watching. Because a lot of times, 80% of the time, I don't, even if I like something, I don't necessarily like it. I just come to scrolling. I'm just scrolling. I don't really think a lot.
Right.
Same. 20% of the time, I'll interact, but who knows? There are probably tons of people that think that I never know what they're up to, and I sadly do as some weird creepy thing, but that's social media these days, though. Yeah. It's like you know more about them than you knew about your family because they're not on social media, which is really strange in a way.
Right.
Like, I should know like what's going on with my grandfather more than I should know with like this random friend who I didn't even necessarily meet in person.
I know.
And I know too much about their life because they overshare and it's like, yeah. But it's fun and it's like, it's weird. And it's like, you can't help but watch. Like, you're in headlights. It's like,
Exactly. Exactly. But that's the social media world we live in.
Because when I then get emails from people, it's weird because they will reference like, oh, I've been, you know, saying you've been busy, which I have been busy. It's not a fake thing. I literally am. I have new things to post about. But I just think it's important because I think that's how you build continuity. That's how you build name brand for yourself because I am my business essentially. Yeah, I am. There is not like a separation between me and what I do, so I have to be out there up front, you know. And it's the music. Yeah. It's not, you know, like a more like a personal thing. It's interacting with the music and interacting with the person, becoming personable, becoming reaching out to people in a way that they don't see you necessarily otherwise.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear you. Well, this has been a great chat. I hope that you are inspired by Alexander's story and all of his pursuits. And you can keep up with everything on alexanderarnson.com. Alexander, thank you so much for the interview and for the chat.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
All right, we'll have to have more of you coming up. Maybe you can do a panel or something with us.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
There's always something going on here. All right, thank you everyone for listening to The Rants. You can find bonus content from this episode and others on our YouTube channel. All you have to do is search Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk, and you can hear bonus content from past episodes going back to almost to the beginning. So definitely check that out and subscribe to that channel, and there'll be more rants to come.
For bonus chatter from this episode, check out Grant's Rants Small Talk on YouTube. This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson.